Hello, I'm Jim Cornell, and this is the WalkingPost.com podcast. WalkingPost.com is the news website dedicated to walking, with all the latest on trails, books, gear, fitness, festivals, events, health, and more. This podcast is number 23, and it's going out on August the 8th, which is International Cat Day. And seeing as mine was born in Russia, it is definitely an international cat. It's also Scottish Wildcat Day, which seems a bit of overkill if it's already Cat Day. It's also Sleep Under the Stars Night. I assume it means the night sky and not celebrities. We live quite close to the dark sky zone in the Galloway Forest, but it's often cloudy. But when the skies are visible, it's pretty impressive. It's also Tarantula Appreciation Day. When we moved to Nevada, the very first morning that we were there, we picked my son's cap off the floor, and there was a tarantula underneath it. Welcome to the desert. Today is also Infinity Day, which I could talk about forever, but I won't. Let's move on. As for birthdays, well, three people that I actually knew. Dustin Hoffman, Roger Federer, and The Edge from U2. We had a storm pass through this week and a wet weekend, so there's been virtually no walking involved, and I'm actually recording this a couple of days in advance, as I'm away on Friday, so it's quite possible something interesting has happened in between. Last week on the podcast, we talked about a wonderful new book about wayfaring, and we talked about the Trent Vale Trail. On the podcast this week, we have three guests, but two interviews. We're talking about dinosaur trails in Leicestershire and an 8-day, 80-mile walking challenge in Somerset. Of course, first we take a quick look at some of this week's articles on WalkingPost.com. If you do have guest ideas, news, subjects to cover or comments, or if you want to advertise, please do get in touch via WalkingPost.com. Or you can just email me directly at jim@walkingpost.com. So now it's time for our occasionally short, although not today, look at some of the headlines of the news articles we had on walkingpost.com this past week. As you'll find out shortly, there is an 80 miles in 8 days challenge walk in Somerset. Transport for London opened its 2025 grants applications for community groups to encourage more walking, cycling and active travel, and work to upgrade the TAF trail is set to begin in the autumn. RAB is launching a training platform for retailers. Cornwall is looking for opinions on its rights of way, and there is a new D.H. Lawrence Trail in Nottinghamshire. Ireland is investing more money into a variety of trails. The next steps have been revealed for the Bath Walking, Wheeling and Cycling Links scheme, and you can read all of these and more at walkingpost.com. So that brings us to the first feature on this week's podcast, and we're talking about dinosaurs. Well, kind of. If you're on a trail in Leicestershire this summer, you might spot some dinosaur trail markers created by children at schools from around the county. They are to promote T-Rex or Treks. It's a great scheme to promote activity, and to tell us about it are Kit Prime, Communications Officer at Leicestershire County Council, and Jessica Herbert, a safe and sustainable travel manager. And in the conversation, it's Kit you will hear from first. To get things going, I wonder if you could, before we talk about the walking trails and the program that you came up with, if we can go back a little bit and how the idea came about in the first place.
So there are loads of different things that go on in the county, lots of different organisations, Leicestershire School Sports Partnership organisations, Active Together, Everyone Active, organisations like that. Choose How You Move is just the Leicestershire County Council and Leicester City Council group for safe and sustainable travel. So we end up partnering or talking to them quite a lot. And previously there had been monster trails in Harborough that were the same idea. So I'm a comms officer. I work with Choose How You Move, promoting and getting the word out and helping to develop these sorts of projects. So the Choose How You Move team went and worked on the monster trails and saw how successful that was, and then came back with the idea of doing something for Choose How You Move themselves. With the school side of what Choose Who You Move do, because they will talk to different audiences across the county, whether it's schools, whether it's businesses, whether it's cycling groups, audiences. As part of that school program, there's always an opportunity to do stuff like competitions with schools, with that network. And that was what was decided, to do a competition that then could be brought into the different parks around the county.
Just to add to that, I think sort of like from Leicestershire County Council point of view, national government point of view, we understand how important it is for children to be active. So I think active travel, you know, when we talk about active travel, it's not only thinking about removing congestion of the road, that's really important, but, you know, looking at improving air quality, health, well-being, physical activity through movement. With school children, I think it's a really good opportunity, you know, to think of projects that perhaps, you know, are fun and engaging. And that is part of the Choose How You Move program, is to kind of demonstrate how you can move, choose how you move, not just thinking about commuting. So, and how then you can apply that to the school gate. So although this is a summer program, I think it had really good links for us about how it can encourage active travel. That, you know, so you can practice that in the summer or the school holidays, and then you can kind of take that with you, you carry that forward.
A good example of that is actually when we went to present some of the certificates of the winners from this school competition, they had to draw some of the dinosaurs that have now gone into the parks. We went to one of the schools that are working with us on school streets, which is another campaign that we're doing specifically around the drop-off times and pick-up times for the school run. So we know that they're already very engaged in trying to encourage different ways to get to school. That shows that willingness to work with us to encourage all sorts of different ways to choose cycling, to choose walking, to choose parking and then walking to school. So we're able that way to get that network in, which is quite helpful.
With the competition itself with the schools, what were the criteria? So what were they told to come up with?
Really, a lot of it was just the creativity of the kids. The only requirement really was it would have to be done in the springtime in order to get it done for the summer. And it was just draw a dinosaur, your favorite dinosaur, whatever sort of dinosaur, cycling or scooting or walking, promoting active travel from the drawing itself to the trail. And then also the competition on the trail itself now, that's also about encouraging and learning about active travel.
It must have been fun looking at some of the entries.
Yes,
yeah, some brilliant designs. Yeah, and really creative thinking of what active travel could look like in the future, I think, as well, from some of the pictures that we saw. It wasn't just bikes and skateboards, and there was quite a lot of different designs coming through, so it's brilliant.
And kids always love dinosaurs, so it's always really engaging, isn't it? You've got Stegosaurus on the scooter and all of that sort of fun stuff.
How did you then turn those into markers? Was it just a case of taking what they had and laminating them, or were they professionally printed onto? How did the marker part of this work?
So this campaign is in partnership with Questar, who do the trails, interactive trails outside areas like parks and like greener environments. They're a very sustainability minded organization. We've partnered with them to spruce up the drawings, so there's a certain consistency across the markers. And so mentioning that we went to that school that was doing school streets, when we were able to present the certificates, we presented them with the drawing as well of any drawing that was going to go on the markers in the parks. The three kids that we talked to were very, very excited to see their dinosaurs. They were able to make those designs, and then they sent them back to us to print out and laminate and put across all the different parks. And the Choose How You Move teams chose the parks and then went out in preparation, made the trail, and then put them up. Questar, how they work as well is they have a QR code, and that's the interactive part of it. So with a QR code, there's also a letter on each of the markers, and that word, if you unscramble it, if you go to all of the markers, you unscramble the word, you get an active travel word, something like ramble or cycle, something like that, small enough that kids from all ages could guess the word. So the idea is that they then the parents or responsible adult can scan that QR code on that marker, submit the word, and then be entered into a competition with local businesses who have generously donated prizes. They're businesses from all over the county as well, which was really nice that we get to support local businesses too.
How big are the markers?
Probably about 15 centimetres long.
Yeah.
So they're quite visible. So I think what's quite good is that where they're located in the parks, they're almost a bit eye-catching as well, because you're like, oh, what's this? And yeah, I think some of the people that have taken part in the competition would have scanned into it sort of wondering what it's about. Although we have marketed it and we have advertised it, I think what's quite good is that curiosity can get the better of you sometimes as well. And there's word of mouth that comes with that. Yeah, I've seen a few now dotted around like the local parks. I think what's good is that, you know, Kit's kind of mentioned the sustainability of it. We can reuse those dinosaur pictures as well. So we've kind of kept that in mind. But they do look great. I think the children should be really proud of their designs. And I think it's quite cool. As a kid, if you get your picture back and it looks animated and professional and you can say that you've designed a dinosaur, I think that's awesome. And they'll remember that. It's bringing back a memory of connecting the dots between enjoyment and around the educational side of why they're doing it. You know, we talk about that a lot, connecting a memory from when you're younger about something that was engaging enough to hold your attention that you can keep, but why you were doing that. I think, you know, and again, that kind of links back to doing these activities that can also work with performance in education and things like that. So, you know, that's another really key aspect of making sure that it looks good, it was memorable, it was fun to do. You can talk about it with your friends and probably say, well, you know, I designed a dinosaur down in Welland Park. Go and have a look at it. You know, I think it's by the blossom tree or by the river. You know, it's keeping that conversation going in creative ways, I think, not just sort of, have you heard about active and sustainable travel? We think you should do it because it's really good for you. You know, it's engaging the right audience, you know, in the messages that you want.
But also it's a free trail as well. And during the summer holidays, I mean, I'm not a parent, far too young for that, frankly. I'm not a parent, but I can entirely empathise with the fact that summer holidays, schools are out, you've got your kids home and you want to do something. Childcare is expensive, but this is free. Because there are 14 parks as well, you can go all around the county and do it and you know, spend your days doing it. So not only is that free and beneficial for the parents, but that's also a way for the parents to encourage the children more and make that a really positive thing for them to guide as well and spread that word to other parents, to their communities on top of that too.
I think what was really key about it is obviously it's a free activity, but also we're trying to link it into making sure that it's accessible by public transport. So, you know, you're not having to rely on cars to get to the parks and the quests and the trails as well. Than being off-road, you know, in quieter, greener spaces, hopefully it gives parents or carers or whoever's with the children, you know, a bit more confidence that you can try out your bike skills, or you can let the children try and be guided, you know, in terms of mapping out a walk, deciding where would the next best place to go would be, practicing those skills that link into the active and sustainable travel side, as well as catching the bus. You know, I am a mum, got a six-year-old. I really do try and encourage him to read a bus timetable or what fare you might need to ask the bus driver. You know, they're skills that we're trying to develop at the moment.
Did you tell the kids where their markers were, or did they kind of have to do all 14 trails so that they could find their marker?
Via the schools, the kids were notified if their dinosaur was going to go on a marker and where it is as well.
I'm sure that they'll be maybe even doing more than one trail so that they can see their friends' markers, and it's a great idea to get people out.
I just wanted to mention we've got on our website, we've got all the information about it, but then we've got links to each individual park and the buses, the bus routes and walking maps there as well. So we are trying to promote it in lots of different ways.
Again, just trying to think about things that can help families during the summer. I think for the public transport side, we have this free Saturday travel on buses throughout August. A lot of parents do have to work in the summer holidays. You know, they're not going to be off Monday to Friday as an activity, but looking for something free to do with the children. Again, you know, if you're going to be traveling on a Leicestershire County Council supported service, you know, you can access free travel on a Saturday. So again, just kind of trying to maximise opportunities for people to be able to get involved, you know, at a lower cost. Especially, again, like Kit says, you know, if you're having to pay for childcare throughout the summer, sometimes a free activity can be nice to fall back on.
nothing better than getting outside either and enjoying nature and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, and we're so super lucky in Leicestershire, you know, the amount of green space. And I think, again, working with the district councils on this project with the parks, you know, it's a great opportunity to showcase that free space for everybody to use. It's for the residents and visitors to use. So, again, showcasing what people might not know is around. And sometimes I think you can go to a park and not realise how big it is.
How many parks have you included?
We've got 14 and they are all over the county. Blaby, Melton, Harborough, Hinckley and Bosworth, North West Leicestershire, there's loads. Obie Wigston. We've tried to get the parks that are quite central to those areas, to those districts, because it really is about trying to get people out to the nice places and know what's in their communities, have a bit of pride in their communities and see, you know, actually there is a lot that we can do here.
Everything is subject to funding, but I think this is something that we would really like to carry on moving forward. That, you know, we've seen a great level of engagement through the schools and through pupils and working with their families. We definitely want it to be something that is community based and carries on, you know, as a bit of a legacy. So we'd be really excited to carry that forward. We've seen such positive feedback on it so far.
How long does it run?
It'll be end of the summer holidays.
In Leicestershire, we have slightly different term dates to the rest of the country. So the children for the Leicestershire schools will be going back just at the end of August. Our partner, schools partnership in South Leicestershire, they'll be running another monster trail in October. So again, we could work together to encourage the use of the green spaces, creating a bit more activity when children aren't at school.
And you already mentioned the feedback's been really good. So clearly it's something that you can take and run with next year as well.
I think so, yeah. And again, it's a conversation it started, you know, with parents and children when we're working, like, you know, Kit said, on other projects.
A great idea, and as children are generally excited to see their work, I'm sure some of them are tackling every dino trail in the county. I can definitely see other counties trying the same thing next year. Now we're moving on to a long walk. National Trails has announced an 80-mile walking challenge in September that will take place along the Somerset and Exmoor coast on part of England's newest national trail, the King Charles III England Coast Path. Participants can do the entire walk, which takes 8 days, or they can pick certain days to walk. The event starts on the 28th of September, and to tell us all about it is Isabel Pring of the Somerset Trail Partnership for the King Charles III England Coast Path. So I guess before we even start talking about the challenge walk, I wonder if you could tell me what the Somerset Trail Partnership is.
So a trail partnership is basically the method by which most national trails are managed. And so quite often, you know, in partnership with Natural England, there will be a trail partnership. It's usually made up of stakeholders along the route of the trail. So for something like the Pennine Way or Offersdyke Bridle Way or something, it may be, well, it's not smaller than ours, but you know, something like the Southwest Coast Path is 630 miles and is large and has lots of members and stakeholders from different counties and everything. We're just one county. So, for example, our partnership includes the Quantock Hills National Landscape, Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust, which is part of Slimbridge, but there is also a Sturt Marshes base here, the Somerset Wildlife Trust, the Ramblers, the National Trust, who own and manage some of the areas along our trail. I'm trying to think if I've missed anyone. I'm sure I have. Obviously, Somerset Council's Right of Way team, which is where I sit, although I'm employed by the partnership to sort of pull it all together. Although in general, with most national trails, because of the nature of a trail and its status as a public right of way, very often a lead partner will be the right of way team from the council that the trail sits within. For the King Charles III England Coast Path, there are multiple trail partnerships because it's too big, so it gets divided up. And so at the moment, I'm on a trail partnership that just covers Somerset. And we don't actually cover all of Somerset. I cover from Minehead to Breen Down. From Minehead going west, because that has always been part of the South West Coast Path, that falls within South West Coast Path and Exmoor National Park. And so my remit kind of stops at Minehead. So essentially, the Coast Path was created, and with it, various trail partnerships to manage it. And we get an amount of money from Natural England, and we have a remit to try to meet what they call the four E's, which is to enhance, engage with people, contribute to local economy, and create a great experience for people. So really just to try and deliver something that enhances the landscape, that gives everyone a great experience, and also is to the benefit of local communities and businesses.
Do you have autonomy and independence to be able to say, well, this is how we're doing it?
To a degree, there are performance indicators that Natural England set. And so, you know, each year we tell Natural England how we have met those performance indicators. But, you know, the methods we choose to meet them might be quite different as long as we meet them. One group might decide they're going to enhance the trail. Imagine you're going through salt marshes. They might decide they're going to build boardwalks to make it more accessible to people so they can get out there and experience it. Another group might decide that they're going to use flagstones, or that they're going to use natural materials for their finger posts, or put up certain styles of interpretation panels and information boards and things. And so, although most trails might do a lot of the same things, they won't necessarily all be doing them at the same time. And obviously we have a set of branding guidelines for national trails, so based around the acorn. And then each trail has its own branding. So for the King Charles III England Coast Path, the way it works is if there was a trail already there, like the South West Coast Path, the South West Coast Path remains, but it becomes part of the England Coast Path, or King Charles III England Coast Path. Even if that trail wasn't a national trail, we have two local trails in Somerset, the Parrot Trail and the West Somerset Coast Path. And there again, it remains the Parrot Trail, but it is part of the King Charles III England Coast Path. And so it doesn't take over from existing trails. If anything, it just supports them, because as a national trail, it gets some budget to enhance it and make it accessible.
I heard recently that the England Coastal Path in its entirety was just 66% completed. Are you complete where you are, or are there still bits
we are
to connect?
We did have one very short section that opened, I think it was 2 years ago, but the bulk of our section from Breen down to Minehead was opened quite some time ago. And in fact, next year will be its 10th anniversary. And so that has been going for some time. We still have our problems and things. And the nature of a coastal trail is there is always erosion. There's always something that you have to consider and may not have considered. I know some of the parts that have been more difficult to open have suffered because they are constantly eroding so fast that, you know, establishing the trail and getting a base for it. There is a system that I think we've used it twice. It might be three times now, called Rollback, which in certain locations where we're pretty sure the coast is going to erode, when the trail was created, they actually negotiated the ability to keep rolling it back as that happened. Negotiating that is quite complicated, obviously. And so some sections do definitely take longer. Also, sections where you might have sensitive wildlife, trying to get a balance between providing access but also protecting any wildlife that prior to that access basically had it all to itself. You know, some parts of the coast path are not on existing public rights of way. Those can take longer to establish. Whereas I think for us here in Somerset, most of it was on existing rights of way. And so it was a bit more straightforward to get it going when it started.
You have the challenge walk coming up. So I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the 80 miles in 8 days challenge walk, its history and all of the details.
The challenge walk came about as part of a festival to celebrate the coast of Somerset, including Exmoor. The Trail Partnership laid it on in the first year, but in the end, timing was tight and there wasn't enough take up, and we didn't go ahead with it in the first year. But the feedback we got suggested that actually, with a bit more notice, to have 8 days off to be able to do it is something people need more time to plan. So the suggestion seemed to be that we should perhaps go ahead and try again in the second year. And so we did. And I think it went very well, even though we had, I think the first few days were, it wasn't solid rain the entire time, but it did rain. And bless everyone who walked. There might have been one or two who didn't, but most people turned up and they did the walk and I think enjoyed it. If you go out prepared, if your goal is to complete the challenge and to walk the coast of Somerset, then, you know, you have to accept that it might rain at some point. Fingers crossed for this year that it doesn't, because it's obviously much, much nicer if it doesn't. There were only three people who actually completed the challenge. I think there was one person who did all but one day. And there were a couple more who missed one or two days for various different reasons. There wasn't really anyone who couldn't complete it. I think it was more a case of things came up and they couldn't make it on all the days in the event. But the three that did complete it, I think, were really happy. And I know, because I still walk with them, are now heading along the Southwest Coast Path and are into Devon. So they're well beyond Somerset, not quite in Cornwall yet, I think, but every odd weekend here and there, we go out and do another section of the coast path and keep going, basically. So it's certainly an inspiring thing to do.
Are there any limits to numbers?
The way it works is every morning we meet at the point where the day's walk will end. And where possible, I arrange that that is somewhere where there is parking and or close to public transport, if there is public transport available. Here in Somerset, there isn't everywhere. And if I can arrange sort of guest-free parking, I do. And so we always meet at the start of the walk, and then we have a minibus to take us to the beginning. And so essentially, we can walk at our own leisure back to where we started, where people's cars are, or public transport, or whatever. We have a walk leader and a back marker, so that if the group is different paces, we can cope with that. But in general, it's 13 people plus the leader and the back marker. And then there's one extra space in the minibus just in case. It's a nice number. It's not too many people, and make for quite comfortable walking and getting to know people. And not all of those will be walking every day. Whilst there is a walking challenge, the tickets are split. Some of them are for people who want to walk all 8 days, and some of them are for people who just want to join for that day or for 1 or 2 days. You know, so we do get people who walk 2-3 days, or maybe say, oh, I've walked those 3 days before, but can I do the other 5 days? And so that is open to people to do.
What's the cost for?
I think to do all 8 days is £68, and to do just one day is £9, and that is using our transport. If you decided you wanted to actually do it and stay in B&Bs or along the way and literally start with us and then stop and keep going without using our transport, it is slightly it's less. So if you have someone who's going to drop you off and pick you up, or you're going to stay somewhere, you're going to stop at places to stay all along the route, that's not that easy, mind you. You would probably still need to have taxis or people to pick you up at the end of the day, just because being the coastal path, sometimes where we stop, there just isn't anywhere to stay. In general, people have been pleased with that, because you're not rushing. You're not trying to get back somewhere because there's a minibus that's going to pick you up and take you somewhere. So you really are walking at your own leisure to complete it.
It's 80 miles and 8 days. I assume that they're not exactly 10 miles per day.
No, they're not. Some of them are 8 miles. I think that the longest is 12 point something miles and the shortest is 8 point something miles. The first year we ran it, we walked from Greendown to County Gate, so the north of the county to the south. This year we're going to do it the other way around, so we're going to start at County Gate. And those first 2 days are on what, if you were walking in the other direction, would be the beginning of the Southwest Coast Path, which is quite challenging. Although in Southwest Coast Path terms, I think those days are classed as moderate. For our challenge purposes, they are challenging. And I think even people who walk the Southwest Coast Path, if they haven't walked that before, the walk out of Minehead and up onto the top of Exmoor, it introduces hills very quickly. And so we start from County Gate, which is up on the top of Exmoor, and then we come down to Porlock, which is right down on the coast in the first day, and then we go back up onto the top of Exmoor and down to Minehead. And so those first 2 days are at the low end, 8 miles or so. And then I think we have another short walk on the third day, which is much easier, but the idea is that people get a bit of a rest. And then we have the longer walks, which are mainly flat. There's a few hills at the beginning, and when you get to Breen Down, obviously you have to go right up onto the top of the down. It's a sort of natural pier that sticks out into the channel. It has steps that go up it, quite a lot of steps, and which I think Southwest Coast Path walkers would be familiar with. In between, certainly sort of Stiart Marshes and there, so for almost half of it, I would say it's actually completely flat. Although that also can present challenges. Sometimes, you know, walking on the flat for long periods is just as challenging as climbing up and down hills where you've got more variety. So if you're someone who regularly does multi-day hikes or has walked the Southwest Coast Path, you would probably say it's not particularly challenging. But if you're somebody who walks 5 or 6 miles regularly, but hasn't considered taking it that one step further and doing multi-day walks and perhaps stretching yourself a little bit, then I think you might find it challenging. You'll be tired at the end of it, that's for sure, but a doable challenge, as it were.
And obviously you're going on existing paths, so do you have the opportunity to say next year when you do it again, we'll do it slightly differently or a different route?
It's on the coast path. And so basically the route is always going to be the same. So we did it in one direction last year. We're doing it in the other direction this year. I'm unsure how much life something like this can have, in that, you know, once the main people who think they fancy doing it have done it, they're probably not necessarily going to say, oh, let's do it again, unless they really love walking or in support of a cause or something like that. Because it will be our 10th anniversary next year, I'm sure we will do something, and we probably will try to make it a bit different in some way. But I'm not going to say, yes, we're going to carry on forever and ever. But hopefully we do have a cause that we support, and hopefully that will also help a bit. But I think, you know, we could target different groups. We could perhaps try and do it at a different time and see whether we could get schools involved, or, you know, split it up even more, make it shorter walks and have different schools do different sections or whatever, so that it was over a shorter space of time, but more people walking at once all along the coast. You know, I can see that there are things we could do there.
Somerset is quite diverse. There are lots of nice parts of Somerset. Could you maybe give some of the highlights and some of the communities that you would go through on the challenge?
Yeah, we start up on County Gate. So for the first part of it, you're basically in Exmoor National Park. You've got rocky cliffs, you've got little paths. There's some classic coastal views in Exmoor National Park, sort of showing all the headlands going off down towards Devon. Similarly, if you're looking back the other way up the channel, you can see Steepholm. Steepholm and Flatholm sit in the Bristol Channel. So you've got Porlock Weir and Porlock next to Porlock Marshes in the middle of that, which are two, you know, originally would have been fishing communities. These days, tourism, walking, really popular, quite vibrant coastal villages. Once you come down off Exmoor, you come to Minehead, which is famed for Butlins. I think it was the first Butlins, although someone might correct me if I am wrong, but I think it was the first Butlins. But again, was at one point an old fishing port and had, still has an old harbour and quayside cottages and everything. From there, we shadow the West Somerset Railway, which comes out to the coast at Doniford and Watchet, and then goes all the way through to Minehead, which is a heritage railway, a steam railway. We shadow that along. So we go through Dunster and Blue Anchor, but we don't really pass through the villages because we're staying on the coast for most of that distance. And then you come to Watchet, which was originally a port, a busy working port that was sending iron ore across to Wales, coming off the Brendon Hills and just serving generally the whole area. What was the port is now a marina, and it has an arts centre in. And so that is one of our stopping points along the way. We stop at Minehead, we stop at Watchet. And from there, as you leave, you're basically heading towards the shoreline of the Quantock Hills National Landscape. There's quite a lot of small villages. It's an area that was part of the sort of dividing up in 1066. And so you've got the old county houses, some of which you can see from the coast path. So you can see the old houses that were the manors for the different areas along there. And a lot of it is old estate land. So it's mainly farming land then, rather than the sort of Exmoor cliffs and things. Still cliffs. And at Blue Anchor, it's the start of a geological SSSI, site of special scientific interest. And that is for the rock strata and for the fossils. And so all the way through to Lilstock, which is just before Hinkley Point and the power station, on that section of coast, looking down from the top or looking up at the cliffs, there's some quite incredible swirling patterns either on the shore or all the different strata running through the rocks in the cliff face. It's quite stunning to look at in that section. There are faults that run through as well, which are the same faults you get on the south coast. And so when you hear about cliff falls and things there, we do have similar things here where the cause is not erosion. It's actually things butting up to each other and moving and the cliffs falling away because there is actually a fault in the rock strata there. And lots of fossils, ammonites and all sorts of things that you can. We walk across two of the beaches and there's usually something to see on the beaches without having to look too hard. And then we walk around Hinkley Point, which I believe is the largest construction site in Europe, which I know is very contentious with lots of people. You know, some people hate it. Some people are indifferent. I mean, there is a certain seeing all the cranes and the amount of work and effort that is going into building a nuclear power station is quite something. And there's a lot of activity there and we divert inland there just to skirt the whole construction site. Eventually the coast path will move back to the coast, and from there the geological SSSI ends and the nature and the ecology SSSI starts, and then it's part of Somerset Wetlands National Nature Reserve. It's a SSSI, it's a Ramsar wetland site, it's got conservation all over it, and that continues all the way to the north of the county. But we've got salt marshes, we've got three estuaries there, the River Parrot, the Huntsville River and the River Brew. And all of those have bird life and some salt marsh and mud banks on them. And winding rivers, Paulet Hams is opposite Stiart Marshes, which is a big oxbow in the River Parrot. There's a barrage balloon hangar there from experiments in the Second World War to work out how we could defend ourselves against barrage balloons, which is just a very, very large building, basically. From there, you basically heading up towards Breen Down, there's a 7 mile sandy beach, which has got Burnham-on-Sea lighthouse in it. People call it the lighthouse on legs. It's a wooden lighthouse which is actually on the beach, still working. You can also see an old shipwreck which is coming up out of the sand on the beach there, and you've got sand dunes backing the beach. And where possible, if there's an opportunity to nip in at lunchtime and get a cream tea, if people are interested, we do try and support that. There are businesses along the coast. We have a trail passport, which various businesses have stamps for. They all have different stamps. And so if you want to, as you walk along, we stamp you for completing the 80 miles in 8 days. But you can also pick up stamps at some of the businesses that are along the coast path as you walk.
You also mentioned there's a fundraising aspect to it. What's that part of it?
There is. Through an earlier initiative, I'm doing some work promoting walks on the Outdoor Guide, which is the website that was set up by Julia Bradbury and her sister. I had some contact with them, and then they set up a foundation, the Outdoor Guide Foundation, the goal of which was to try and make it possible for every child to get outside no matter what the weather was. And the idea, what came out of it, is that, you know, not every family can provide waterproofs and wellies and all the clothing that is really needed for a school to start taking children out. So they came up with a plan to try to put together sort of sets of mixed sizes of 10 sets of waterproofs and wellies. And so they started a waterproofs and wellies campaign, and I thought it would be quite nice for us to support that. So last year we raised £350, and that bought 10 sets of waterproofs and wellies for West Huntsville Primary School, which is one of the coastal schools that we pass, or well, we pass West Huntsville as we're on the walk. And this year I upped my game and said I want to raise £700. I'm afraid it's one of those things that, you know, it just depends on how it goes on the day, really, and whether people get into the fundraising spirit of it. But if they do, then hopefully we will be able to find two more schools that we can buy waterproofs and wellies for.
Right. And when is the walk? September?
Yeah, 28th of September to the 5th of October.
All right. And how do people sign up for this?
We are on Eventbrite, but also we have a website, which is somersetcoastfestival.co.uk, which is probably the easiest way for people to find it. Or on social media, the Coast Path is at ECP Somerset. It's a great walk and it's a great group of people. You know, the people who are now walking the Southwest Coast Path together, they didn't all know each other beforehand. You know, they met doing this walk and found a group of people that they enjoyed being with and carried on walking.
Beautiful part of the world, and hopefully that event is well supported. It's been a while since I've been down to that region, but I have done quite a few parts of that coast. Well worth seeing. I'd love to do it, but I think I have two other prior events to go to around the same time. Plus, Somerset is kind of far from where I live now. But then I think pretty much everywhere is. Anyway, that's it for another Walking Post podcast. Hopefully, as this goes out, I'm walking along an interesting coastline, but it could well be absolutely pouring, seeing as the forecast in the UK changes every 20 minutes. We always used to joke that we thought the name of the biggest city in Arizona was called Phoenix 43, because whenever you heard the weather forecast, they would say, Phoenix 43. I'm also a little concerned that by setting this up in advance, that it won't actually go live, because, well, technical incompetence. Anyway, hopefully it does. If you have news, suggestions for podcast guests, or are interested in advertising, then please do get in touch at jim@walkingpost.com. So, I hope you enjoyed this week's walkingpost.com podcast, and I hope you have a great week, hopefully with a walk somewhere scenic. So, until next time, happy trails! Walking Post from walkingpost.com is an Air Coastal Media Limited production.